Welcome to Health Connections, a show about people, health, and policy. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth, back in the driver's seat one more time with Dr. Carol Myers. If you listen to our previous editions around the holidays, we had a little bit of a switch up where Dr. Myers was the interviewer. We had State Representative Jeremy Faison and State Senator Richard Briggs. And before we get into our conversation, Dr. Myers, I have to ask, as a professional, is it easier to ask or answer the questions?
I think both have challenges.
Yeah.
I like mixing it up. I wouldn't want to have all interviews or all being the interviewer. So yeah. I liked our approach, Brandon.
Good. Well, good. We got some good response from it from our listeners, too, so I'm pleased to hear that. Well, we're sort of back to our usual format, though, at least for the next few weeks where we'll be talking, you and I, and we're going to get to some unfinished business. These are topics that we've talked about before, late last fall and then again over into the winter of 2017 about some health legislation, particularly at the federal level, that we were waiting for reauthorization or waiting for some certainty, some clarity to come in. So we're going to check back in on some of that, beginning with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. This was the much vaunted, long-awaited tax overhaul proposal from the GOP, and it had its own hurdles. The bill was signed into law in late December by President Trump, and of course with the name, the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. I wonder, what does that have to do with health care? So lay that out for me.
Actually, the bill will have major impact on Medicaid and Medicare, and there's two major ways. The bill eliminates the Affordable Care Act individual mandate beginning in 2019. That's probably the biggest issue. You'll recall the individual mandate is the ACA provision that requires all Americans to purchase health care or be penalized. The CBO estimated that 4 million people will lose insurance coverage in the first year of the elimination of the individual mandate, that's 2019, and a total of 13 million will lose coverage by 2027. Also, the other part of this is that premiums will go up in the non-group plans, that's the individual markets, about 10% annually because of the loss of the individual mandates. The other thing that's really important is something that we'll have to wait and see what happens. And this is a provision called PAYGO, P-A-Y-G-O. That's the acronym.
Okay.
It's possible that the new tax law will trigger automatic Medicaid and Medicare cuts. PAYGO provisions mandate cuts in federal spending whenever there are decreases in federal tax revenue, such as we'll see under this bill, and or increases in mandatory spending and entitlement programs. Now, Congress can elect to override the PAYGO provisions, but that's yet to be determined. So this is something we need to continue to watch, but it could pose a major upset to the Medicaid and Medicare programs.
Well, obviously, those are two big issues. Is that all as far as the medical effects or potential medical and healthcare effects of this tax cut bill?
Actually, there's another effect that's somewhat more indirect, but I think we need to watch it closely. The new tax law adds significantly to the federal deficit, and this creates a real potential threat. I expect, and this is my opinion, that we will see an exacerbation of increases in the federal deficit act because of the tax reform law. Of course, it's debatable about this depending on your perspective. Some are saying we won't see the deficit that was predicted by the CBO. But if the deficit continues to rise, my prediction is that this will embolden the calls by the Republican House leaders, it's already happening, and the president for what they're calling entitlement reform.
And these would be cuts to social programs and medical programs, kind of like what we talked about, Medicare, Medicaid, potentially Social Security down the line.
We saw this last week with the president signing an executive order that allows states to require adults that are well to have to work or do community service or do job training to be able to receive their Medicaid benefits. So this will be done on a state-by-state basis based on a waiver application. Projections regarding the impact of the new tax overall, this is where there's a lot of different opinions, vary by the source and the assumptions and the methodology used.
Mm-hmm.
But estimates range from a low of $448 billion to a high of $2.2 trillion over 10 years. So I think this is something we're going to have to reckon with. even if PAYGO is not invoked, as we talked about just a moment ago, Medicaid and Medicare are vulnerable if the federal budget deficit continues to increase.
You and I often spoke in 2017 of the buzzword being uncertainty. One of those concerns was reauthorization of a children's health insurance program. It goes by the acronym CHIP. And even as recently as this month, we've seen attempts to get that federal funding restarted. That has not been successful. And so states, at least the states that can afford it, including Tennessee, are having to foot the bill out of their own pocket for now.
Correct. Listeners might recall that we talked about the failure to reauthorize CHIP and the community health centers, which is another issue. We're over 100 days since the funding authorization expired for these two programs. Failure to fund CHIP has created a dire situation for children, families, and state legislators, as you have mentioned. 9 million children across America depend on CHIP. Congress has failed to date to provide the stability needed to ensure that this successful, long-term, bipartisan program can continue. It has become a political football, and we're going to have to continue to watch this closely. Congress must pass a spending bill by January 19th.
This is just the end of this week. Yeah,
right. Big deal in the news. Many people and groups are urging lawmakers to take immediate action and extend CHIP funding for 5 years as part of the spending bill. Some have even called for 10 years. We've seen a lot of pushback about this. Mm. Let's see how this unfolds over the week. Let's talk a moment about community health centers. They don't get quite as much press as CHIP, but they are very important. They're an essential primary care medical home for about 1 in 15 Americans, or that translates to 26 million Americans. What concerns me is these are among the most vulnerable citizens. They're mostly uninsured or insured through public programs. Many of them live at 71% below the federal poverty level. They are the largest source of comprehensive primary care for medically underserved populations. We have about 1,400 CHCs across the country in 8,500 sites. The loss of funding has huge implications, and we're beginning to see some of the dire downstream effects of the lack of funding. So we need to stay close to this one also, Brandon.
Well, we talked last year about problems with the Affordable Care Act, the individual markets, efforts to stabilize those markets, to help providers kind of defray costs and try to keep premiums down if possible. And again, those market stabilization efforts, like CHIP, like the CHCs, had a deadline at the end of the federal budget year, which was last September, which feels like a lifetime ago already. Give us some update on that.
Well, there was a lot of drama around the holidays. Susan Collins and others tried to keep efforts alive around market stabilization to accept some of the market stabilization suggestions that were forged, you recall, by Senator Lamar Alexander and Patty Murray as part of the HELP committee. As part of her vote for the tax reform bill, well, Collins voted yes on the tax reform bill, but the Republican congressional leaders have yet to deliver on the promised market stabilization bill that she asked for. Now, one of the big parts of market stabilization is retaining the individual mandate. Well, that's a moot point now,
right,
as it has been eliminated through the tax bill. So I don't know what the next move here is for Senator Collins and or Senators Alexander and Murray.
The last time we talked about the closure of rural hospitals in Tennessee, we had a couple of interesting statistics. By the way, we've had a couple more rural hospitals close here recently since our discussions in 2017. We have the highest rate of hospital closures in the country, and I think the second highest total. Only Texas had more rural hospitals closed than Tennessee. Where do we stand on this issue?
Well, those are old numbers now. Uh-oh. Not only do we lead with the highest rate in the country, we also lead with the highest number. We have surpassed Texas, and that happened with the announcement that the hospital in Decatur, Tennessee, will be closing. Mm. Now, when the General Assembly reconvened a week ago on Tuesday, the advocates were out in force promoting Medicaid expansion as one strategy. It's maybe necessary but not sufficient to stop the closure of rural hospitals, we're hearing something different. You may recall State Senator Richard Briggs was featured here on Health Connections on January 2nd. And he basically said then and at a legislative forum on January 6th that Medicaid expansion will not be seriously considered this year. And that's fairly consistent with what we're hearing. Cited were other priorities of the governor and the state legislators, as well as the expected shortened legislative session, because this is an election year, and all of our state representatives and half of our senators will be out vying for your vote.
And money, I should point out, because there's a ban on campaign fundraising while the legislature is in session, so it's conceivable they'll try to get business wrapped up as soon as possible to get back out on the trail.
Exactly, and that's the pattern we've seen year after year when there's an election.
We'll touch on another issue that was raised in a recent, before the holidays, edition of Health Connections. We had Representative Jeremy Faison, who's from Cock County, talking about his passion for medical marijuana legalization in Tennessee and his ideas about that and some of the medical benefits he thinks will come from that. So obviously that'll be brought up before the legislature this month and going in deeper into the session as well.
Yes, Representative Faison is sponsoring a medical marijuana bill. It's not the only bill we expect this year. But just after the first of the year, after Representative Faison was here with us, Attorney General Jeff Sessions at the United States level announced that he had removed the barrier that had held back federal prosecutors from pursuing marijuana cases in states that had legalized marijuana for medical and/or recreational use. Now, it's really hard to gauge at this point if the support that we see building for medical marijuana in Tennessee as a strategy for addressing the opioid abuse epidemic is enough to get Representative Faison's or similar bills over the hump. So this is another one of those stay tuned. But there's been more discussion, more activity, and I would say some building support that we've not seen in prior years when our state has looked at medical marijuana. So I can't predict this one.
Well, speaking of not being able to predict, that is your buzzword going into 2018 as well. Again, uncertainty was key to many of our discussions about this nexus of health policy and how it affects people. A lot of uncertainty in 2017. That needle seems not to have moved from that position in 18.
Exactly. We started 2017 with lots of uncertainty. It's still with us. I expect it to be with us for a while. What we will do on Health Connections is to continue to follow issues, try to discern and translate what's going on in our nation, national and state capitals, and how it affects us here in East Tennessee. I'm going to particularly be interested in following entitlement reform. What's being called reform is not, in my opinion, reform. Reform means making changes with the intent of improvement. Thus far, from my perspective, I want to qualify that, the conversations about entitlement reform at the federal level are too centered on cuts in funding and elimination of programs, not the people who need the services the programs offer. I think we can balance being fiscally responsible at the federal and state level with being a compassionate country and a compassionate state.
Well, Dr. Myers, you are an eternal optimist. We will check back in, of course, as the legislative session goes, as the congressional election year goes as well. We'll see what kind of effect that might have on medical legislation. I'm sure we're going to have lots to talk about as 2018 continues to unfold. Dr. Carol Myers of the University of Tennessee College of Nursing. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. You've been listening to Health Connections. Dr. Myers, as always, a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you.